So Don Manigley, welcome to the show. Film professional, project management based out of Philly. I've done a number of projects in Philly, so I love Philly. But Don, tell me a little bit more about who you are, what you do, what you've been up to.
Well, thanks for having me, Glenn. So I'm Don Manigley, based out of Philadelphia, born and raised specifically in South Philly, which there's a very distinct difference between being from Philadelphia and being from South Philly.
And is the Fresh Prince from South Philly?
West Philly, actually, is where he's from.
Fresh Prince is from West Philly, is born and raised. Okay.
But I'm a Temple University grad, class of 2008. As you can see, it's by my gray hair. It's been a few years since I graduated. I've been involved in filmmaking on and off since I was about 17, honestly. I currently work as an actor. I've been an AD on various projects. Most recently worked as line producer. And I also currently am a VP of outreach for Boathouse Pictures, which is a Philadelphia-based production company. We do everything from films and documentaries to music videos, commercials, and live streaming events. We've done a really broad spectrum of work in the last 9 years.
Yeah, live streaming has been my bread and butter, I want to say, for the last four, and especially, or maybe even five now, and especially during the quarantine, the remote virtual live streaming, events, all the hybrid events and the conferences, seminars, webinars, those sort of deal. That's what probably saved me and my family. And my wife, she's a teacher. She does well too, but, so AD and actor, that's kind of like pretty much what all my IMDb says is either AD or actor. But a line producer. So, explain to me what the hell a line producer is, what a line producer does, what is the line?
So it's always about make sure I'm the line producer, so make sure you don't cross this line.
Cross this line, yep.
What's funny is that I kind of feel like line producer and AD, there's a little bit of a gray area between the two sometimes. Oh, yeah. Line producer is involved a lot on the back end when you're talking about like your finances and your resourcing and things like that. I mean, basically the purpose of a line producer on a set is to make sure everything is running smoothly, to make sure people are where they need to be, to make sure the crew has everything they need, make sure the actors are there and prepared to work. I mean, I just finished a short film shoot back-to-back days this past weekend. And that was pretty hectic because certain things, as you're well aware from being a filmmaking professional, don't come together until the last minute. Mm-hmm. Who has last minute scheduling conflicts? Who has transportation issues? Who needs more gear? It's issues with the location itself sometimes. These are all the headaches that the line producer has to think about when working on a project. And especially if you've had a couple of rough days on set and you have more days coming up, all right, what do we need to do to prepare to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, like where's Glenn to host his own podcast? He's, well, hey, listen, I'm going to text Don 30 minutes prior. Listen, I'm going to be late. And there's a lot of folks, I've been an actor, and if I'm running late, if I see even one hint of traffic, I text the line producers or the ADs or the APs or whoever's contact information, the cast wrangler or whatever. Hey, I'm hitting traffic. I'm going to be a little late. Oh, no problem. We're behind anyway. I always get that text. We're behind anyway, so don't worry about it. So
that's what always happens. And honestly, yeah. As long as you're someone who's proactive and you let people know, really sorry, I'm running late, it's totally fine. If you tell us you're running late, then that's not a problem. It's when you don't tell us and we end up, getting 30 minutes or an hour behind because of it. It adds up.
And you know what? I found that even if I think I'm going to be 5 minutes late and I might not, I'm still going to text them. Hey, I hit traffic, even though I didn't, I'm going to be late. And then I show up early still. And they're like, I thought you were going to be late. I'm like, the traffic just disappeared. I don't know what it was. You know, I'll even give them, sometimes I might even give them that buffer just because like, I think I kind of got held up. You know, doing something with the kid or doing something last minute with the wife, and then finally jumping out the door, getting in the car. I might send out that buffer on purpose. But also, you know, it's about planning the night before. It drives my wife nuts, but I'm like, just give me an extra 10 minutes before we watch, you know, Clickbait or whatever, before we watch Schitt's Creek, you know, just give me 10 extra minutes. Let me pack up my go bag, pack up the thing. Let me put a bunch of stuff in the truck. It'll take me just 10 minutes. I'll make you a cocktail and make it up to you. And then in the morning, I can be a little bit more relaxed. And then, because nothing's worse, especially as an actor, there's nothing worse than being in that car sweating. You know how like you're rushing and you take a quick shower and then you get out of the shower and you're still drenching with sweat. You're still like gushing sweat. And then you get in the car and you're muggy and it's winter because you're frantic and you're freaking out. And then makeup is like, what the fuck did you do? Did you run a marathon before you got here? Did you run here from home? Like, I gotta go cool off. So a line producer makes sure everybody's where they're supposed to be, make sure everything's on time. Now, what the hell does an AD do?
Oh, well, for me, the AD is basically like the backup to the director. I mean, you're keeping track of your shot list, taking notes on what you can use and what you can't use, making sure script pages are all distributed to everyone. It just, you're basically shadowing the director the entire day and keeping him on schedule, keeping him calm, keeping him on his or her game. And what's really funny is I remember about 2 years ago, I'm going to say, I worked on a picture in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And I was working as a script supervisor on that project, which script supervisor is pretty much what it says for those of you who are unfamiliar with the title. You're following the script. You're making sure there's continuity from shot to shot. But what happened was I got to the set and the AD on that project approaches me when I first get there. She welcomes me to the set and she says to me, so you're going to be our script supervisor for the day, right? And I said, yeah. Can I ask you a question? And I said, yeah. She said, have you worked as an AD before? And I said, I have actually, yeah, on a couple of projects. She said, okay, what exactly am I supposed to be doing? So I took a deep breath. I was like thinking to myself, okay, you're one of those. You have no idea what you're doing, even though you've been hired to work as the AD. I said, well, first thing you have to do is make sure that you follow the director around everywhere. You got to keep everything moving during the course of the day, similar to the line producer, but it's even more stressful because the AD has about six different people yelling at them all throughout the day. The DP's yelling at them, the gaffer's yelling at them, the cast wrangler's yelling at them. The AD is one of the most stressful jobs on a film set. Anyone will tell you that. You probably know from personal experience, Glenn. Mm-hmm. Because as stressed out as the director is, the AD is just, I mean, you've got to keep things running. And like I said, you've got to keep the director and the cast calm throughout the whole thing, if, especially if stuff falls behind.
Yeah, I've dealt with asshole ADs and I've dealt with really calm, great ADs. And after, you know, we were talking offline a little bit about, you know, my military background and stuff like that. And there's been, you know, assignments that my units had and I've had. And I come to realize that as an AD, I'm not going to die. Being an AD is not going to kill me unless I make it the end of the world and I have an aneurysm or a heart attack. But an extras wrangler or a line producer or a producer upset at me or grilling me is not going to kill me. So it was almost after, because I AD'd a bunch of stuff before I joined the military, the National Guard, and I let it get to me. After the military, I was like,
piece of cake.
Relax. Listen, we're a little bit behind. I'm working with the director. We're gonna catch up. We might have to scrap some shots. Here's where we're after this. Here's where we're after that. Like calm, like the way I'm talking now. And these guys are frantic. I'm like, we're gonna nail it. Don't worry, we're gonna nail it. There's been people that got out of line. I had to correct them. Don't get me wrong. I will pop back. If someone pops off at me, I'll pop back. I can tell someone's just frantic. Like, dude, we're gouging money. And I'm like, hey, listen, we're still on track. Don't worry about it. There's a couple of things we could slash off the shot list here. We're set. We know where we're going. I got people on standby for this when, you know, it's not going to be a company move. It's kind of like, you know, a half company move. We're going to the other side of the building or whatever. Lights are pre-staged. DPs took a look at the lights. Da, 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 da. So, and then that has also kind of gone into my acting as well, where I show being an actor, and you know damn well, that is the cushiest job. You're just going to chill in the green room. They might have you on set for 30 minutes. You chill in the green room for 2 hours. They might have you on set for an hour, just chilling. And if you're a good actor, that's right, you know, right place, right time, preparation. You know, for me, it's memorizing my lines, connecting with the character, being comfortable in front of the camera, and that's it. And again, due to my military experience, it's always law enforcement or military roles. I love to play those roles. Typecast me. I even tell people, they're like, well, you know, do you want to play a cop again? Yeah. I'll do it all day on everything. I'll be that detective in every single movie. I'll be Munch from Law and Order SVU for 30 years. I would do Munch for 30 years, like Belsner did.
That's a good point. And you know, a lot of actors I know fear typecasting, and I'm probably one of those people. I mean, I just like to play a variety of roles, honestly. But what's funny is like I'll go through like a little bit of a phase where people like always want to cast me as like one of the villainous characters or whatever. And then maybe I'll go through a phase where I'm in a bunch of comedic roles, a bunch in a row, you know, but there are a lot of actors who really made great careers out of being typecast. I mean, do I need to name them? John Wayne and Clint Eastwood? I mean, how many more movies could they have played military officers or cowboys? But
you know, John Wayne passed. Maybe John Wayne definitely passed much sooner than Clint, but look at Clint's career in the last 20 years, not just the last 50 years, but the last 20 years changed drastically to such diverse work as a director and as an actor. There's a number of roles. I mean, you know, everybody teased him about Bridges of Madison County, but he was phenomenal in it.
Yeah.
It was a romantic drama. No guns, no cow, no horses, no gunslinging, no serial killers to hunt down. And it's because he accepted, he even said it as Dirty Harry. He even said, a great man knows his limitations. Those were his limitations at the time. He knew it. Cop, you know, Dirty Harry or Outlaw Josie Wales, the gunslinger, you know. That's what I'm going to do. Build an empire on it, Mal Paso. And then all of a sudden, Bridges of Madison County, Mystic River, the Million Dollar Baby, like all these, I mean, Oscar nom after Oscar win after Oscar nom after Oscar win. And then, you know, I mean, a musical. He did a musical, Jersey Boys or something.
Right. Who would have thought back in the 70s or 80s, you never would have thought Clint Eastwood would have directed a musical. But he did.
And he did. And then a couple of indie stuff like Play Misty for Me, you know, was a suspense thriller about an obsessed girlfriend. And then Beguiled still dealt with it was a horror suspense thriller, but it dealt with Civil War still. So he was kind of like playing within his own tropes, but experimenting. I don't know if he directed Beguiled, but I know he directed Play Misty for Me. But I mean, look at Belsner. He was a comedian. Richard Belsner was a comedian, and he ends up playing Munch, you know, a TV detective.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. And he nailed the role. I mean, he played it perfectly. Oh, totally. Yeah. So, I mean, how, in the last year and a half, I mean, how have you been impacted? The film, the production company, you, I mean, for me, like, you know, I mentioned earlier, the live streaming work, there was a plethora of the remote work for me. So how did you...
It's funny you mentioned that because that's kind of what I did for the last year and a half. I was working for a creative agency based in Philadelphia. Well, one office based in Philadelphia. The company as a whole is actually headquartered in London, England, over in the UK. But I joined that company in January of 2020. Had spent about 2 months working in our office, and we had actually moved into a new office a couple of weeks before the pandemic hit or before everybody decided to go into lockdown mode. Mm-hmm. And at the time, obviously, we thought, okay, this will last, what, a few weeks maybe, mm-hmm. at most. and few weeks became a few months, and it just stretched out and stretched out. I was not on a film set by my recollection at all in 2020. I went to a couple of places where we were basically locked into conference rooms and could set up like our computers and spread out from each other, maybe by 6 feet or so. So I was able to do that for those hybrid and virtual events. But as far as actual filmmaking, that was pretty much limited to Zoom calls. And ironically enough, I did work on a project, which is now, we've now done three films in the series, a project called Happy Hour. And it's basically about a group of eight friends who get together for a virtual happy hour and just talk about shit for about 45 minutes. And we had a lot of fun filming the episodes. I mean, we all were remote. Some actors were based in New York. Some were based more in the Philly area. One girl, I think, actually lived in Texas, if I remember correctly, or was living in Texas at the time. But we made it work. And it was a lot of fun. But as I said, there's nothing like the feel of being on an actual set.
Yeah.
Among people.
Yeah. I mean, that's so, you know, and it always comes back to that. That's one of those mantras of this podcast is set life. I know this is a virtual, you know, podcast right now. And eventually, you know, I want to say 2019, I was trying to set up a situation where I was completely functional out of my home. I could work from home, work remote, and take gigs, but I would have like maybe a podcast, and I'd have some sort of a live streaming company that was remote or hybrid, and I could operate, I could turn my basement into a kind of like the center NASA Houston Broadcast Center type deal, because I had been full-time freelance for so long. I finally built that nest egg. I kind of built that resume and the rosters and the relationships and the networks the networks that then I could finally settle down. And when I met my wife, I just knew immediately, Christ, I'm going to end up marrying her. And I hope I don't slow down with, you know, the creatives. And then we had a kid. I knew we were going to have a kid, and eventually we did. And I wanted to be set. And so boom, quarantine happens. I'm set. I'm ready to go. Live stream, retry my podcast for the third time. Me and my partners, we retried this podcast for the third time. But set life, you know, I graduated in 2004, a degree in film and TV production and audio production. And then after the military, like I said, that kind of gave me the confidence and the method, you know, the background method acting experience to be a cop and play law enforcement military roles. And it was just that desire to be on set, acting behind the camera, in front of the camera, and fill in the schedule and make money from it. And I was making money. I was full-time freelance, whether it's acting or crew, paying bills. And then that kind of like that compound interest, everybody talks about entrepreneurship, and that compound interest kind of compounded within me, the compound interest of I'm making money. I'm not making $1 million a year. I'm making money, paying bills, living, eating, breathing,
going to set. Exactly.
Going to set. What did you do this time? I played, you know, every once in a while I might play a serial killer or some random stepfather that, you know, finds his daughter murdered or something like that, something terrible, end up covered in blood or something. Work or a freaking you don't have BGE. I don't know what your power company is in Philly, but I did a BGE Baltimore Gas and Electric training video. I think that's on their website. Okay. You know, DAP, DAP the caulk for like tubs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I did a video that's only on their website. I had to send people the link to the website, and they're like, holy shit, there's Glenn on DAP. You know, and it's like, you know how much money that I got from that? But it's like these bizarre kind of like give and takes. So much money for the DAP, so much money for the plumbing commercial, not as much money for the crime shows on ID that millions of people see, but you know, it's just like this bizarre kind of climb, but it's that compound interest within your mind. It's like, God, I got to keep doing it, you know?
And I think for people who work in the industry on the East Coast, especially in like the tri-state area and also mm-hmm. in DC metro area, like where you're based, it's yeah. like, you know, a lot of the way they're able to make a living like full time is when they take these gigs working for companies like, you know, appliance businesses and, you know, real estate companies and so forth. And it's the more creative stuff when they get into the actual filmmaking and all that stuff. You know, you can still make money off of it, but it, not as much. It's like a lot of it is more, it's volunteer and it's low wages. So you kind of have to balance the two. You've got to balance your more like creative work with the gigs that you just have to take to help you survive, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, if you make a really great commercial for some mom and pop shop from the middle of nowhere and people see it, they might, something might jump out and people might go, wow, this person's really a talented editor or DP or whatever the case is. And next thing you know, you're getting your big break and working on something that you really wanted to work on.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, Jason Alexander did some bizarre, I think it was a McDonald's commercial or a Burger King commercial. And now he's George Costanza. And Nathan Lane was the NyQuil guy. You remember those NyQuil commercials? Nathan Lane was the one that was like coughing and stuffy and congested.
I think I do. I was really young when those were out, but yeah, I do vaguely remember those.
Yeah, I mean, those were like early 90s. He was the NyQuil guy, and then he got picked up on a show, I think, and then he's just like, he's the god of theater now.
Yeah.
But you strike gold with something and experiment. And you're right. It's a trickier market in the DC metro area. And it's probably a better market in Philly. And obviously it's a better market in New York and LA and so on and so forth. But, you know, speaking of that, have you been back on set? So now we're a year and a half after freaking March 2020. Have you been back on set? What are the projects you've been working on? Or
yeah, so 2021 has been a lot better for being back on set, fortunately. I worked on a short a couple months ago that's actually up on YouTube right now called Nexus of Death. It's a horror short. This is a project I just acted in, but it was a lot of fun. I don't want to give too many spoilers away about the actual plot, but the only thing you need to know about my character is I play a sleazy business guy who's in his hotel room getting ready to make a pitch to a group of investors, and some crazy stuff happens to him while he's in that hotel room.
Awesome.
It was shot by a local filmmaker. Filmmaker's name is Peter Gaudioso. He's based out of Philadelphia. And if you look him up on YouTube, his channel is Man in a Bubble.
Okay.
And he does a lot of music video, a lot of film work. Also has his own podcast, Nerd Topic, which I've been a guest on once or twice before. That's going to be making a comeback this fall. But that was a fun project to work on.
You said Nerd Topic?
Nerd Topic is the name of the podcast.
Okay. All right. So what's next on the agenda? What's the next set of plans? What's next on the agenda?
Honestly, I'm always making plans. There are always more goals, because to me, this is an industry where the sky is the limit. Like you never like, even when you reach the top, it's even when you're somebody who's fortunate enough to reach the top, it's like there's always like a higher pillar to work towards. You know, there's always new people you want to collaborate with. There's new projects you want to get off the ground. I, like anyone, I've worked on a lot of projects over the years that have been start and stop a lot. And that's for various reasons. That's scheduling issues, yeah. Budget. Mm-hmm. Budget is key with any project. If you don't have a budget, you don't have a movie. But as far as what I have coming up right now, I just wrapped our first couple of days of shooting on a short film called Food Pursuit. It's mm-hmm. a comedy. It's about two roommates who check their fridge one day and realize that they both forgot to go grocery shopping. And that's kind of what starts off the madness that ensues after that. But it's we've got one more day of shooting left with that. And then it goes into the editing phase, and then we're going to start submitting to some film festivals, and we'll see where it goes from that point.
So what were some of the challenges with Nexus of Evil and Food Pursuit. Because what I've been seeing a lot lately is a lot of confined movies. People are going back to some classic filmmaking of the confined movies. I just watched one called Monsters of Man. And it's about the CIA. I think it's the CIA working with a contractor, and they're trying to utilize these robotic sentries in combat. And obviously, you know, like the AI goes haywire. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's a bunch of people in a Cambodian office. But then you have Neil McDonough. I don't know if anybody recognizes that name, but
Arrow, a bunch of projects he's been on.
Yeah, he was in Ravenous. I think he got famous from the movie Ravenous.
Oh yeah, that's an old one. I forgot he was in that.
I think that was his breakout role, and he's always the villain. He's got, you know, a striking face. He's always a villain now. He wasn't a villain in that one, but
has the bleach blonde hair and
bleach blonde hair. Movies. Yeah. And so he was like a special cast, and you kind of noticed that they kind of like gave him his own kind of special credits, but he's just in a room by himself. There's another character that's in a room or a car by himself. Then there's four people in a room by themselves, and then that number kind of dwindles. But then there's like maybe 10 people in this Cambodian village. So I don't know what their workarounds were for vaccinated or quarantine. And I'm kind of interested in going back and seeing how they shot it. And then there's another movie that just came out with Gerard Butler called Greenland. And you can kind of tell that it's such a huge scale global disaster type movie. Yeah. But you can see the workarounds, that a lot of the setups are still confined. And so with Food Pursuit and Nexus of Evil, I mean, were these work... I mean, obviously they were shot in the last year, right? So
last couple of months, actually.
Yeah.
So for Nexus of Death, it was just myself, the director, who also doubled as, you know, the cameraman and the makeup artist, and that basically was it. And that's because he wanted these are going to be a series of shorts, Nexus of Death, but the director just wanted it to be one person, and it's basically me having conversation on the phone. Once we got to post-production, a voiceover was added to it, but that was all recorded in a studio.
Virtually, probably, yeah, remotely, somebody did, yep.
But yeah, I mean, the director did everything he could to basically maintain social distancing protocol. As far as I know, everybody that worked on it, that was on set, has been vaccinated, so that wasn't really a concern as far as that goes. But as we've seen, even people who do get vaccinated have sometimes wound up catching the Delta variant or whatever. Yeah. It was. But we had to have some workarounds for that particular project. And Food Pursuit was a little less confined, I would say, because we had a crew of about 7 or 8, and then plus our 3 actors. And one of our actors is also the writer director of the project. This would be Matthew D'Elia, also a Philly-based actor and filmmaker. But I mean, we were a little less worried about that. We basically just kind of told cast and crew, you know, look, if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to worry about wearing a mask, because most of us have been vaccinated. But we said, but if you feel more comfortable wearing a mask, you know, as long as you're not on camera wearing a mask, obviously, right, then that's totally fine. I mean, we want you to be comfortable in the setting that we're in, because both shoot days were basically indoors in these, you know, maybe 600 square foot apartments, so not a lot of space there, and there's a lot of equipment and gear we're cramming into this tiny little space, plus we have to make room for food and props and everything else. So there were a lot of workarounds that we had to do, but I mean, everything went pretty smoothly.
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, all the doomsayers, oh man, we're never, what's going to happen? I'm like, come on, man. I mean, we'll be back at it. We might have to change our production schedule a little bit, but
yeah,
we might have to, like, you know, alter the shot list a little bit, but I mean, come on, we'll be back at it. Come on. It's not the end of the world. Jeez. So, I mean, what's down the road, say next 6 months to a year from now, any, you know, schedules coming up, any productions coming up, any scripts you're trying to put out there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, I mean, I still have my my own podcast on YouTube, which we have a couple new episodes that are going to be dropping pretty soon. That's the Uncaged Voice podcast, and that's on YouTube. We've done about 10 episodes to date, which are great. It's myself, and it's also under my Instagram handle, Donnie Cage, obviously inspired by Johnny Cage. And I'm also, I also co-hosted with my buddies Top Tier Brian and Jigsaw Jester. Top Tier Brian also has his own YouTube channel if you want to check him out. He does a lot of gaming videos for people who are into that.
Okay.
But we have a lot of fun. I mean, we talk about all things entertainment related. We'll talk about sports. We'll talk about movies. We've done, I mean, we've done a lot of movie talk. We've also just, we did one episode where we were going to kind of talk a little bit about cancel culture, but we ended up not airing that episode because we kind of were like, I don't want to rub people the wrong way here. People are very sensitive these days when you bring politics and social issues into the fold.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think even saying, you know, you're probably going to get this video taken down off YouTube by saying cancel culture. We'll see. That'll be an experiment. I'll let you know what happens. I mean, there's a couple of words apparently that YouTube will hear, whatever, you know, they scan for, and your video will get apparently dumped immediately. And it's
their algorithm.
Yeah. Well, I forget what it's called because the FCC does one thing. And I can't remember. Someone told me what the name of the other thing is that scans this audio for words. And obviously, they're scanning for hate speech, which they should.
Oh, absolutely.
But then there's, you know, some of the gray area. Like if you're discussing certain topics openly, and then certain words are hit. But I'll try to avoid those. We'll see what happens with cancel. You already said it. Cancel culture. You already said it. So let's see what happens.
Well, let me cancel the fact that I said cancel culture.
Can't do that now. Too late now. And I'm not going to cut it out. I want to see what happens. So, yeah, man. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, you know, with the podcast, I mean, people are experimenting. You know, the video, I mean, the streaming. Freaking Fortnite became the EDM stage for, you know, 6 months.
Yeah,
I mean, that blew me away. So you're Mortal Kombat fan, I take it, Donnie Cage.
Definitely, yeah. You know, grew up a fan of the games, the movies. Yeah. You know, was really excited. And we've discussed Mortal Kombat a lot on my podcast. I feel like every other episode we drop a Mortal Kombat or Batman reference, just because we're all big fans of the franchises. But the very first podcast I did in the series was just basically a franchise retrospect about Mortal Kombat. We talked about the history of the games, how they became movies, how they tried to develop them into web series. And back then, a few months ago, it was before the new movie came out. So we were like talking about, what do you think is going to be good or not?
I was going to bring that up. So that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah. Cause I know you were going to ask me, like, have you been watching anything?
What'd you think of the last Mortal Kombat movie?
Well, the thing is, the Mortal Kombat movie that came out
the thing is,
I hated Mortal Kombat Annihilation with a passion, so nothing will ever be as bad as that.
It won't.
But I got to be honest, to wait 24 years for a new Mortal Kombat, 24 years for a new Mortal Kombat movie.
I think it was, yeah.
And get what we got, there was a lot that didn't sit right with me with that film. And I hope that if they do go forward with making a sequel, that they learn from some of their mistakes and can sort of cleanse the palate a bit.
Listen, that first Mortal Kombat movie, what year was that? 94? 95?
Yeah.
95 was outstanding. Everybody was a great actor and could fight decently. And then obviously Annihilation. And then I think the web series was fantastic. I mean, Michael Jai White, they should have ran with that for... They should, sure. You know, I don't think Netflix wasn't at the stage it was at the time. I think Netflix out. But, you know, Netflix bought Cobra Kai. So Netflix should have bought.
Which is amazing, by the way.
Which is amazing. But they should have bought Mortal Kombat and continued that as a Netflix series like they did Cobra Kai. And Netflix bought another YouTube Red show. And I can't remember what it was. So obviously with Mortal Kombat 2021, it was, okay, we're going to hire all these martial artists who aren't great actors. And then Kano was hysterical. Kano stole the movie.
That was he was best part by
and
far.
And he couldn't fight for shit. I mean, that actor might be able to kick my ass. I don't know. But he couldn't fight compared to the rest of those guys. And then the one guy who could do both, it seemed, was Jax. The guy who played Jax plays
Jimmy Olsen on
Supergirl. Thank you. Yeah. And he was perfectly fine. Acting-wise,
I like Mikad Jax. He was
good. Yeah. Character-wise, acting-wise, he could fight. He was decent in his scenes. He probably had big green arms on for the CGI, but he was still pulling off his scenes.
Yeah.
I don't know where the hell they were going with this dragon tattoo, discovering and formulating the powers. I mean, that was just not.
Well, what's funny about that, and I talked about this on my podcast with my friends, is I like the idea of like people having the dragon tattoo because they're chosen to defend their realm and everything. Like, that's a cool concept. But this whole idea that once you kill somebody, it transfers to you. I'm like, no. That's not supposed to happen like that.
And they create a whole new character, which is fine. They create a whole new character. The main antagonist was like an ancestor of Scorpion or something.
And the actor, I mean, Louis Tan, he's a real life martial artist, and he's, as far as acting, he was
decent. He was good too.
Yeah, but I felt like they wanted you to care about that character, and they didn't do anything to really make you care about him.
Right.
It's just like, oh look, he's a washed up fighter, and he has a wife and kids, so you're supposed to sympathize with him. I'm like, yeah, but I don't.
Yeah, you know, there was I totally forgot what I was going to talk about now. But there was another movie. Oh, geez. Kill List. Kill List is like a super low budget, but chock full of these martial artists, and everybody can act pretty well. I think it's a Prime original, and it's super independent, super low budget.
Yeah.
But the fighting is outstanding. And I think, and there's a lot of that action back to Monsters of Man. Like, I don't recognize any of these people, but these actors are phenomenal. They're running and ducking and getting blown up. And
yeah,
I mean, I've gone rock climbing and I've done a lot of stuff, you know, in the military, and seeing folks like, and being an actor, and I'm even stunt trained, being an actor, jumping over these rocks, like rocks hurt. Like the big rocks, you know what I'm saying? Like if you're climbing up these, those rock formation they have in Cambodia and Thailand, and if you're trying to jump over them and duck and slide down and through a crack, I'm like that. And these people are wearing cargo shorts and t-shirts.
Yeah,
like I don't see any pads on these guys. So yeah, I mean, Mortal Kombat 2021. They should have ran with the web series and done a movie from the web series universe.
Instead. Yeah, very easily could have done that, or just honestly, like you said, have Netflix take it over and continue the web series, because I feel like it's one of those franchises where I mean some franchises to me just don't work as movies. They would just work better as a series.
Mm-hmm.
Like do a 10 episode this series for like Street Fighter or one of the other big series. You know, don't condense everything into a movie, because then it's just going to be like, well, we didn't get to see enough of this character, and we didn't get to see enough of him, and what about this plot point that they left just dangling? Well, you solve that if you turn it all into a series, which is why I'm super excited to see them turn a character like I'm just blanking on the name now. Next year, Marvel has a Moon Knight series coming out with Oscar Isaac in the role. That's probably going to be great.
Yeah. And what do you think of the What Ifs? I wasn't too excited about What If, because I've just never been a Marvel animation fan, except for Fox's X-Men back in the 90s, back in the early 90s. That was always
that was my show back in the day.
Yeah, that was. But I mean, it's blowing me away, and it's within the MCU. I mean, there's no other, there's really no other universe now when it comes to Marvel, except for, let's be honest, the MCU.
Yeah, I've not watched the Doctor Strange episode yet, but I was really impressed with the first three episodes, especially how they, in the third episode, were twisting, put that new twist on the formation of the Avengers. That was,
I would have never thought it was him.
Yeah.
It would have never occurred to me like this, without doing any spoilers, this invisible serial killer.
Yeah.
I would have never thought. And it, once he popped up, I was like, of course.
And what's actually really funny is the people who are familiar with that character from the comic books, you'll kind of, a light bulb will go off in your head when they say, and you'll say, oh yeah, that makes total sense. But within the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's what's going to surprise you.
But yeah, if you're familiar with that character from like the, from the long running, and it made perfect sense too, because that is what happened to that guy.
Yeah.
Sort of, for the most part. That's what happened. That's essentially what happened to his psyche and his character and his well-being and all that stuff. But never would have saw it coming. Like, I was completely like, oh my God, of course. Of course it was him with that, without giving away any spoilers. Of course it was him with that ability, right? And it was just like,
with that ability, and of course, his motivation behind his crimes.
Yeah, I mean, going back to your podcast, and it's funny you have a podcast that delves a lot in Batman. You know, back with the quarantine, even before the quarantine, I was always trying to look for like a bottom line production to come up with. You know, me and my colleagues, like, we got to shoot something of our own. We got to come up with something original. We're always trying to like bounce ideas off of each other, and I'm always working on everybody's scripts. I'm always ADing someone else's film. I'm always acting someone else's show. And so we came up with those ID crime shows. I played a detective in a million of those crime shows on ID. Who Killed Jane Doe, Evil Twins, Nightmare Next Door, whatever, you know, whatever, the Dark Souls, all those crazy crime recreate shows on ID. So we produced one based in the DC universe and produced one based in the Marvel universe. Super low budget. And then with the quarantine, I was still able to have two people come over my house with a green screen just hanging on the wall. And then I had some voiceover actors just record the scripts from their own home studio, email me the MP3. I'm just about finished with the fourth seasons now, and those will come out next year. The third seasons are coming out as we speak, and I'm editing the fourth seasons. So I mean, it's just like, even before the quarantine, I was looking for that quarantine bottom line, skeleton crew. When they talk about skeleton crews, I mean, it was like bone marrow crews for quarantine, you know?
Yeah, because it's, as a filmmaker, you keep asking yourself, like, what can I do for the cheapest, with the cheapest budget possible, with the least amount of people? You know, even, like you said, even before quarantine, because most of the time, it's like when you are assembling a crew, all right, well, I need a producer, I need a, you know, casting director, I need an editor, I need a DP, I need a gaffer, all these key roles, unless of course you happen to have someone who can do multiple roles, which is great. And especially if they have their own equipment, then that saves you a lot of money right there. So anyone who's just starting out in filmmaking, if you hire people to work on your crew and they own their own equipment, that's a huge plus right there, because that's going to save you a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And listen, there's times where it's like, okay, I got some money saved up. I'll drop $700 on a Canon Rebel T8i or whatever they're at now, T12i. And you could pull off some decent productions. We shot Rogues Gallery is the DC crime show, and Sinister Infinite is the the Marvel crime show, and I shot most of it on a T2i. About 95% of it. We would go to Comic Cons, film cosplayers for our dramatic reenactments, and on a T2i. And then in the studio, it was a T2i, you know, on sticks, separate audio recorder with a lav. And it's like, listen, quarantine in, we'll make it happen.
I mean, it's crazy because there are some projects, as I understand it, I haven't seen too many myself. I have seen a little bit more of it in commercial work than in film work, but there are people who, there are iPhones out now. They're so advanced that you can basically shoot a film on your iPhone. Which is pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, we're at the iPhone 12, I think, now.
Yeah.
And Soderbergh shot Unsane on the 8. And I think a Korean filmmaker shot a film on the 8 just as the 8 came out, maybe a year prior to Unsane. But Unsane was shot on the 8.
Yeah.
And I don't think they used camera audio. I gotta double check some of like the productions, check the Wikipedia on that film, because you know they always have the production specs like whatever, but iPhone 8 was Unsane as well. Oof. Yeah. Crazy. And it's just, I mean, like Soderbergh likes to experiment and likes to see, like, listen, I can do it. Anybody can do it type of deal. And one of his best films ever was like one of his first films. I can't believe I can't remember the name of it. It's so bizarre. It's hilarious, but he actually starred in it. I always thought it was Moby. When I first saw this film, I always thought it was Moby because he looks just like Moby. But let's see if I can pull this up. Spelling it right. I'm going to get, it's such a crazy, tricky name. But he just really like went off the rails with experimenting with filmmaking and what he could do. Let's see. I don't want to bring this show to a complete halt, but
But it's like I got to know the name of it.
Yeah, Schizopolis. That's what it was.
Schizopolis.
Yeah, because he goes Schizopolis, and he did another movie called Kafka about the writer.
Right,
Kafka.
Right.
Jeremy played Kafka.
Of course he did.
And Kafka and Schizopolis are some of his best work, I think. But I mean,
because he just let his creativity go wild.
Kafka, The Limey, Schizopolis, and I'd have to say Unsane was pretty wild as well. I mean, all his work really, I mean, is astounding. But and Contagion. Contagion is another, I think he did Contagion, right?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, he did Contagion, and Contagion was pretty much like the manifest for how to deal with the last year and a half. So thinking about the last year and a half, I mean, what's you know, we were always talking about the new normal. And, you know, for a while I was asking people like, okay, for me, the new year wasn't really January 1st. New year was really March 12th, 2021. But now here it is, it's almost September. I mean, but what when you think of like the new you, the new normal, new you, what comes to mind? The new dawn. The new normal, Don.
You know, for me, it's just about being as flexible as I can be when working on a project, because, you know, some people want to carry on like business as usual, because now they're like, you know, basically what have we done? We've flattened the curve, you know, cases are going down and everything. We can kind of get back to full crews on a set, which, you know, that's, is that really true or not? It's hard to say. I guess it depends on what state you live in. But, you know, for me, it's just about having that flexibility, knowing that you may work with a full crew. You may not work with a full crew. You might work on a project where you're going to be shooting things on Zoom you just have to know that there's a lot that could happen that maybe didn't happen before, and you just got to be really accepting of it. especially whatever the rules are on a set. You know, I mean, if the guidelines are pretty much, you know, look, in order for you to come to set, you've got to test negative for COVID-19 first. You know, and I know a lot of big projects, that's a rule they have. And, you know, they do temperature checks when you come in all the time. And what's actually really crazy is traveling in an airport, because I recently traveled to South Carolina not long ago, just for personal travel with a trip with some friends. And I was actually kind of surprised that despite the fact that the Delta variant is still a thing in this country, that there were no temperature checks as we were going through security. I mean, obviously, everyone's got to wear a mask. But yeah, there were no temperature checks or anything like that. So that was a little surprising. But I'm sure you've done some traveling on planes recently. You know, they send you a message on your phone and they say entire plane's been sanitized, it's now safe to board. And they give you those little sanitary wipes when you first go on. They say, please wipe down your seat thoroughly before you sit down. And, you know, you have to keep a mask on. And this is the new normal. Until we're told differently, this is the new normal. So you've just got to be accepting of it. Don't be that guy that's got to argue about the policy. It's like, look, you agreed to be a part of this project. You've got to play by our rules. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. And touching upon that, my military experience, if you spend an extra 5 minutes or 10 minutes on something, you won't have to come back in the middle of the night. You won't have to unfuck a situation the next day. If you spend a little, everyone's like, man, I'm just trying to get out of here. And it's like, take an extra 5 minutes. Yeah. Give me a brief. If I'm taking over your shift, give me a brief. Tell me what's going on. You know, take an extra 5 minutes, make sure things are clean, make sure your inventory is 100%. With filmmaking, if you spend an extra $100 on something within that line, within that budget, you take a little extra time to prep something, then you won't end up spending $1,000 or $5,000 over budget to unscrew the situation day of.
Exactly.
Like, hey, let's dump a couple extra $100 into a third van. Let's dump an extra $100 into some extra lights. Let's buy some backup bulbs, you know, whatever the case. Well, a couple extra $100 here, a couple extra $100 here, and now I get hit with like a $10,000 hit. Yeah. You go way over budget, or you fall behind a day because something broke and you don't have a backup. And
not to mention your attitude also can't be, well, we'll just fix it in post. We'll just fix it in post.
Yeah. Listen, this podcast started off with just Zoom and me recording in Zoom. Then I'd have to dump the video file in Final Cut. Then I'd have to duplicate the video and I have to do picture in picture and then titles and then a background graphics and an opener. And it took all day to render and export and convert and then upload. And so then I started using a different software where it's just all that stuff's within the software. It's plug and play. I don't want to fix anything in post. I just want to have a conversation. And that's a little bit different when it comes to narrative filmmaking. If you spend a little bit of extra time in prep and things are going well in post, a little extra time in prep and things go well in production, your post is going to be like, boom, 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 cut, cut. Got all the shots.
Yep.
I know how to line it up. Mark's script matches up perfectly. There's no, we don't have to go back and do any makeup shots. Fix it in post. And then your editor is going to freaking hate you. Your CGI, your After Effects guy is going to freaking hate you. And he's not going to want to work with you anymore. But if you have things kind of lined up and you can even tell him ahead of time, hey, here's what we're looking at. Here's some shot lists. I mean, a lot of times editors are on set kind of prepping that timeline during production. Depends on the scale of the production, but they're there, like prepping that timeline. So then all it is, you know, all they need to do is a second and final cut in post, After Effects, color, whatever. Yeah, I mean, 5 extra minutes. And I've dealt with so many directors that are just like, nah, I can't
just
do
run,
that.
Just run and gun.
I mean, listen, run and gun stuff kind of looks cool with some stuff, but not everything.
I worked on a project one time, and this kind of ties into what you were talking about. Just real quick. I don't remember if it was the first day or second day of filming, but again, this was an independent film where we had a pretty big crew, pretty big cast and everything, and had to like choreograph and stage these complex dance numbers and everything. And we showed up on set at least 1 or 2 days where we had storyboards and we technically had a schedule in place, but we didn't have a concrete shot list. Like the director was like, well, I want to get this shot. And I'm like, okay, why is this not written down? Like that is the worst thing you can do to not just an editor, but to a director and your cameraman and pretty much everybody else working on the crew that day. Because we basically, I think like our script supervisor or our second AD basically had to like write down a rough shot list as we were going along based off the storyboards. And it definitely set us back a couple hours. And I remember at the end of the shoot one day, we all just kind of sat down and we said, okay, this can't happen again. This whole no shot list on the day of filmmaking, like the shot list has got to be provided to cast and crew at least a day in advance.
Yep.
So that we know what we're in for. We're not saying we have to follow the shot list exactly the way it is. We might even decide we're going to cut some shots day of, but we have to have an idea of what we're walking into.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But to speak upon, you know, what has been coming out during quarantine, I mean, there's filmmakers, they're just so stubborn. And like, no, I have to have this shot a certain way. I've been stubborn myself and I've hindered my own productions. No, I have to have at least $50,000 to shoot this short. And it's got to be shot this way or my vision. And it's like, listen, shooting stuff on Zoom, it's kind of fun to experiment and mess around and just see what you get. I mean, that doesn't have to be, I'm still trying to finish up some projects where there were short scripts for years that I couldn't even really get a dime together to produce it. So during quarantine, I started experimenting with trying to make a motion comic out of these scripts instead of,
yeah,
you know, a cast and crew, and maybe get some voice actors to do some lines or whatever. Email me the MP3s and we'll do these motion comics. And the motion comics might be a pitch for a bigger budgeted version of the same script. So it's just like experiment.
Great and idea.
Just experiment, play around, dabble. I mean, that's how, you know, I know it sounds like you and I are kind of in the same age group. The Golan Globus,
yes.
Canon Films, you know?
Canon Films, I remember them.
And there's them. So there's a couple of documentaries out on them. I think one of them is, it's like something boys, like the Go Boys or something like that, where they just said, listen, we're just going to do it. I mean,
some of them have the money, but we're just going to do it anyway.
But we're going to do it anyway. We're just going to do it. We'll just shoot something. Just do it anyway. I mean, it might not be great, but we have a finished film. And a lot of times, like that's the mentality a lot of filmmakers refuse to have. And they're not filmmakers because they haven't made films. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's you know, you can't. You can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all the people all the time.
Exactly.
Well, Don Mattingly, can't thank you enough for coming on. Don Mattingly on YouTube. I got your links here. Let me make sure I get them right. Donnie Cage 223 on IG, The Donnie Cage on Twitter, and Don Mattingly on YouTube. And the podcast, the Uncaged Voice podcast on your YouTube channel. Hey, Don, I can't thank you enough for coming on, sharing some stories. It was a blast. I'd love to have you on again. Don't go anywhere. We'll chat a little bit offline.